Hi, everybody. We're back. It's Turn It Off with Tracy. Hi. The look I'm getting, everybody. Hi, Tracy.
Hello.
We watched 2015's The Invitation, a horror thriller directed by Karen Kusama. This is our first movie that we've done on the show directed by a woman. I thought it might be, and I had to, instead of having to look up all the individual movies, I was able to go to the Turn It Off with Tracy spreadsheet of terror. And that information is so helpfully provided by Chris Lewis. So,
thank you, Chris.
Yes, this is our first movie directed by a woman. I think there's some stuff about this movie that suggests that in terms of the characters and things like that. But we can talk about that in a minute. Mm-hmm. But anyway, this movie, for anyone who hasn't seen it, it's a very small film. Nobody of any real notoriety, maybe that's not the right word, but nobody really famous except for, I guess, John Carroll Lynch, who is Frances McDormand's husband in Fargo. And
the tree scent.
The tree scent stamp in Fargo. Like, he's really the only person that you would really know at all. But it's, anyway, a very small movie about a very strange dinner invitation that is sent out to a bunch of people. It's by this couple. The wife was formerly married to another guest that's invited. They had a son together. The son died young. They divorced, and now they haven't seen the wife in a couple of years, and she went to Mexico, met this other man, came back, and they seem to be there. They seem to be inviting everybody there to recruit them into some sort of cult.
But it's not that obvious.
But it's not that obvious. It seems more like a self-help.
It's in the details, kind of thing.
And the movie is a very slow burn, very slow burn.
Mm-hmm.
But then when it really kicks into gear, boy, howdy, does it kick into gear.
They make it feel more like a psychological thriller where you're questioning whether Will, the father of the little boy who died, they make you feel like Will could be cuckoo.
Right, because he has these flashbacks that mm-hmm. appear very vivid, and you're like, are they visions? Is he having delusions, or are they just flashbacks? Because he sees the dead son all over the house. The house that he gets invited back to is his old house. So that's even weirder, is that he has to go back to the house that he used to live in.
His wife.
That his wife now lives in with her new husband, who's a creepazoid.
Yes.
And then they've met this really creepy kind of manic pixie dream girl, waif. Creepy girl, and John Carroll Lynch. Like, those are the two people they met in Mexico, and they're all part of this cult. We should get the pink elephant. Pink elephant. That's wrong. We should get the elephant. Elephant in the room out of the way. You saw the whole movie.
I did.
You got through the whole thing. Was there ever a point where you were going to turn it off?
At the very beginning. One, I have to say, it felt a lot like Get Out. The whole way through, it felt a whole lot like Get Out.
There are worse things for a movie to be like than Get Out.
But the coyote part.
I was concerned about you getting through that part, because it's literally like the first scene in the movie where they, I don't know if they established that she's his wife. I think she's his girlfriend, Kira.
Yeah, they didn't establish one.
Right. On the way to the party, they hit a coyote and he has to kill it with his bare hands to put
it
out of its misery. With his tire. Well, I mean, he did it with his hands. I mean, not like a gun, is what I'm suggesting. But, right, when I first saw this movie, like last year, I was like, ooh, that part's rough, but we can get past it. So, like, did you like this movie? Did you enjoy it at all?
I did not like the movie.
Okay. Did you find it involving? That's all I can hope for, really, in these scenarios? Did you care what was going on?
I cared about Will. I cared about Kira. There was a point where I was completely sold that Will was not, in fact, crazy, and that this was a cult. Probably, I think I was 100% after he sees a little thing on crazy husband's laptop that confirms kind of what's going on. Maybe up until I went back and forth, but I was pretty sure it wouldn't have been a movie if he weren't right in his assumptions that something is severely wrong, and other people confirm it. We still don't know what happened to that one lady who left early. Like, did she make it out?
Right.
I
don't think she made it out.
Because John Carroll Lynch.
He's like, oh, hey. And he runs up to her and you never see what happens there.
And then he has his hand under a coat.
Oh, which, I didn't even notice that. Yeah. Does he really?
Yeah. I'm like, oh, he definitely had a gun and he popped her off right there.
Well, that would have made noise, though. They would have heard that if it had been gone.
A silencer.
Maybe. That's true. I don't know.
They were on the inside.
Yeah.
Doors were closed.
I mean, they set up early on that there's no cell reception, mm-hmm. which is now, like...
We know that's not really true.
Well, we know, if a movie is trying to set that there's something bad coming, that's mm-hmm. probably the signal that you've got no cell reception.
Right.
Like, that's an easy line of dialogue to shove in a movie, and you put it in the back of your mind, and you go, uh-oh, people are cut off from help. Because, mm-hmm. of course, nowadays, it's so hard to make a horror movie, mm-hmm. because you can just call for help. You have an immediate lifeline to help in your pocket 24/7.
You know, that's funny, though, because help doesn't come... Like, you don't call the police here and they show up in 2 minutes.
They might.
It takes time.
Could be.
But they're not always waiting at our corner.
True.
You know, like, if something were to happen... Even the police station is barely more than across the street.
Yeah, yeah. The couple times we've had to call the police... They've come pretty quickly, but if somebody was trying to break into the house, yeah, it would
right.
be.
Right. Yeah. And you, like a movie like this, stretches that amount of time out
right.
to, like, you can.
And they establish that they're way up in the Hollywood Hills, mm-hmm. because there's the couple that shows up at the door, and they're like, oh, they're looking for a party, and they're like on foot. And so they establish that if you wanted to leave without your car, that's a haul. Like, that's not a 5-minute jog. That's probably a good long time, so. Yeah, I mean, when I saw this movie, the thing I've told you before.
Say that, I'm sorry, when you saw this movie?
When I saw it the first time.
Okay.
The thing that I liked about it the most, and this is something I've told you before, that the thing that scares me the most in any horror movie are cults. Like, mm-hmm. cult movies to me are the scariest. Because just that idea, and this is a cult movie.
Mm-hmm.
When they watch that video, like, when you watch it, I think you always have to put it in your mind of where would I leave?
Mm-hmm.
At what point would I leave?
Mm-hmm.
And I like that this movie plays on the idea that nobody wants to be perceived as impolite.
Mm-hmm.
So they keep putting up with things that you would never put up with in real life. The minute they showed me the video of the woman dying, I'd be like, I'm out of here.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is inappropriate.
Mm-hmm.
You invited me to a dinner party, and what you're showing me is video of a woman on her deathbed as, like, that's sick. So I would, and mm-hmm. as we talked about, like, I would not, once I saw that the guy... locks the door from the inside.
And takes the key.
I would pretend I'm going to the bathroom and then just sneak out. I would not announce it. I would not be like, I'm out of here. I would just be like, okay, I'm going to come go get some more wine. Or I have to go to the bathroom. And then I'd find my way out and never come back because I would be like, I don't trust these people.
And then John Carroll Lynch would be following you down the driveway.
John Carroll Lynch would be following him.
Because he parked you in.
He did park you. Well, see, that's the thing. If I was that scared, I would just run. I'd mm-hmm. be like, that's it. Just going to run.
Yeah, probably the best idea.
I was worried about how you would handle the ending because it does become a pretty intense slasher movie in the last like 15 minutes. I mean,
that is what you call a slasher movie.
I would never call this a slasher movie. A slasher movie is Friday the 13th, is the later Halloween movies, is where the point of those movies are just to show people getting hacked up in ingenious ways. This mm-hmm. movie's not about that. This movie is about.
The psychology of,
I mean, because clearly the woman whose son is dead, like, is really suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And she, in some weird way, believes this, that this is the path to, like, she wants a
relief.
Shortcut.
Yeah.
She wants a shortcut. She wants to just throw out all the pain.
Yes.
And it's the husband who's like, he doesn't say this, but I mean, that's the idea of, you're going to carry that with you the rest of your life. Your son has died. You're not going to be able to expel it. And when that one guy... The heavyset guy makes a crack and he's like, oh, what, you just crap out your pain? Like, he makes fun of it. She hauls off and slaps him.
Mm-hmm.
So that you show that, like, she can't even tolerate any notion that this is not a real solution.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like, I found all that very compelling. And that's what the movie's about, not a guy with a knife hacking people up. That's what happens at the end. But I would not show
spoiler
you.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler, yeah, for anybody. I think anybody knows. We're 26 episodes in at this point. I think everybody would know. You've watched 26 of these movies. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
Yeah, you should be proud. You know, I've seen some interesting stuff. I thought the thing that made it interesting was near the end, again, we're spoiling the end, but at the end, where it's basically just our main two protagonists versus the bad people, the girlfriend, Kira, shows real grit.
Kira's got guns.
Kira's got guns.
And she's not afraid to use them.
Because when John Carroll Lynch, who everybody knows is big guy, big barrel guy, and he's beating the crap out of Josh Will. Logan Green, I think is the name of the actor.
Will.
He's beating him up. She grabbed, what does she hit him with? She hits him with something heavy. Is it a bottle? She hits him with something. She cracks him over the skull, which knocks him over.
Multiple times.
Well, that's what I was going to get to. I love, in a real life situation, if someone is attacking you, and you manage to get them
down,
keep hitting them. Don't give them time to get up or look at them or be like, are you... Keep hitting them until they can't get up anymore. That's how you do it. And she does that. She's like, mm-hmm. boom, boom. She gives him like that one turn where he looks up at her with his big face all...
And boom again.
And then hits him again, which is good for you, Kira. Like, she jumps in on it. Mm-hmm. She could have run away because he opened the door at that point. She could have left her boyfriend behind, but she doesn't. And I have to wonder... Now, this was written by two men. Mm-hmm. One of the men is the director's husband. But I have to think that's Karen Kusama's... influence is that she's no damsel in distress, mm-hmm. this Kira. She's capable, in this crazy scenario, she's capable and reacts accordingly.
Yep.
Do you feel like you saw anything else different, the fact that it was directed by a woman? Like, do you feel like there was anything about it that would suggest that to you? Do you feel like you saw a woman's touch in this movie as opposed to... The previous 25 movies draw
I think, you know, the fact that it reminds me of Get Out and that it's a slasher movie. Well, kind of a slasher movie. Psychological slasher movie. I think probably... You know, if I could stretch without actually... You know, I didn't think of this while I was watching it. And I didn't say, oh, that was a woman's touch for sure. Because I didn't even know going into the movie and I didn't pick it out. But I think some of the way that you saw Will and Eden, the parents of the child that died, that I think it was a more sensitive look at the situation they were in, having lost their child. And, you know, I think typically women are less afraid of emotional pain than men are. That's, you know, varies from person to person, but I think as a general rule. And I think that the movie shows, you know, that her directing showed that.
Yeah, it's an hour and 40 minutes, and it spends a good, I'd say, hour, like, just building up these characters.
Yeah, you know, and there was definitely a point, Will was in the backyard watching something. He went to get the firewood and watched Eden
in her bedroom.
In her bedroom, putting the phenobarbital in her drawer.
Right.
And I was so positive that that coyote was coming back from the dead.
That's the kind of movie.
Something was going to... Well, what do I know?
Right. There's not a lot of jumpy-outy stuff in this movie.
I thought there was jump-outs. Well,
there's some. It's a horror movie. You have to have that eventually at some point. But it's not cheap ones, though, really.
No.
People don't jump out of windows or off roofs. I mean, there's not a lot of it. The way John Carroll Lynch, he just walks around and shoots people. Like, he doesn't jump out of things. He just, like, walks up to you, boom, kills you.
Real slowly. You see him coming.
Methodical, just boom.
Yeah, and that's his thing. Remember I was talking about how he was weird in some way? Mm-hmm. You said he was weird, he didn't fit in.
Mm-hmm.
And I said they're very social, and he's at methodical. Mm-hmm. It's like he's kind of machine-like.
Yes.
His walk is
He's always sitting off to the side.
He's unemotional.
Like, they're all sitting in a circle, and he's one kind of, like, circumference behind them.
Yeah.
Almost watching everything. And every time somebody's walking, he's walking behind them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's always...
Lurking.
Lurking.
Yes. Yep. Lurking, not participating.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I liked all that stuff. I thought it was good. I liked Karen Kusama has directed three other movies. I haven't seen any of them. Another one is a horror comedy, which written by Diablo Cody, who did Juno.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen it, called Jennifer's Body, which got really trashed, but now people are coming back to it and saying it's actually pretty good, so maybe that's something we could try. But I really like this movie. I think it's interesting, and as I've said on other shows, it has something that I love in movies, which is a great final scene. like final the final shot of this movie, I think is gangbusters, because they show you early on, spoiler alert everybody, the husband who's in on it, I keep forgetting his name.
I think it's Peter, but I'm not positive.
He's beardy. He takes his shoes off and walks around. He walks around the party barefoot, which is a reason to
flip-flop guy.
Kill him. But he hangs a red lantern out in the yard. And
which is clearly a signal. Which is clearly something. It's a signal for.
And then we see, after everybody's dead, except our heroes, and we see the red lantern, and they look out, and you hear sirens, you hear ambulances, and you look, and there's this shot of the Hollywood Hills dotted with the red lanterns. And it was like, wow, this was a cult that was waiting for the go sign. And the night of this party was the go sign. And that, to me, is really terrifying, because I think that's somewhat, like, true to life. David is his name. But that, to me, is, like, that's not a monster. It's not ghosts. It's a cult that is waiting to spring. And that, to me, is utterly terrifying, really genuinely unsettling. And that shot stayed with me long after I saw this movie. And, you know, I hate to say this because it's real life, but, like, you know, we've been seeing a lot of pictures lately of people giving the white power sign in these other contexts, like that guy on the weather, the guy on, like, the science.
Don't give the wrong channel when you're talking.
Yeah, no, whatever. It was like the National Weather Service, and he was on TV, and he saw that he was on TV, and he gave the white power sign. That woman sitting behind Brett Kavanaugh.
His wife, wasn't it?
No, his assistant or something.
Yeah, there we go.
She's giving the white power. Like, there are people out there who are giving the white power signals to the other white nationalist Nazis out there, and they're sending a signal in broad daylight in front of the rest of us. And that's really scary to me.
We're in your cult.
That is really, really, really frightening to me, because it's like it's happening right in front of us. And am I thinking like they're planning some big event? No, I don't. But nevertheless, I think these people would if they could. And so that shot of the red lanterns really upset me a lot. And that, to me, that's what made this movie from very good to, I would say, nearly excellent.
Yeah, the idea that they could work their way into this one small group of people through two people, three people, if you include Pruitt, David Carroll,
John Carroll Lynch.
It's scary because, you know, you see how easily people can be manipulated, and into ending your own life. Seriously?
Yeah, that's how much. Yeah, Eden is that much of a believer. She kills herself. Yeah.
But that they could be accomplishing that same feat with so many
times
people.
20.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. That's just in that little area of California. That's scary. I thought that was whoever came up with that ending, whether it's the screenwriters, whatever. And just the way it's visualized of just this dark silhouette of a mountain with these red dots is just, I was like, oh, wow. And so, and to end the movie on that is great. I think that's a great, unsettling, just creepy way to go out.
Will and Kira think they've made it out, and then they look and they see that this is a bigger battle than they ever realized.
Yeah. I mean, at the very least, we hear sirens, so it's like there are authorities calling in.
Theoretically.
But
whose side are they on?
Yeah. Ugh, it's terrifying. So, anyway, I think this is a great movie. I'm glad you got all the way through it.
It's definitely a provocative movie.
Yeah.
Would I sit through something like this for my own personal enjoyment?
No. That's that. Well, then it's not that we watch other movies. If everybody's wondering, we do watch other movies. I don't just show you these. We do watch other things.
May I suggest, before we go, with Chris Evans?
Okay. Oh, like, you want to? Oh, literally, you want to watch Before We Go with Chris Evans?
Well, I'm saying, you know, if you want to watch a nice movie.
Did I not buy you that on iTunes?
Yes.
Well, there you go. It's available to you 24/7, babe. You can put it on as soon as
you're
done.
I'm talking to our audience.
Oh, I see. If they want to decompress.
You know, maybe if you want to watch a nice movie.
Okay.
That's a nice movie.
It is a nice movie. Yes.
It's a very nice. It's yes. sweet. It's so yes. sweet.
And it's got Chris Evans in it.
And it's got Chris Evans. It's win-win.
So, all right. Well, I think, do you have anything else you want to say about the invitation?
No.
Okay. Did you enjoy the ice cream at least? Again, this is for Chris's records.
Chris's records.
Ben and Jerry's Caramel Sutra Core, I believe, was the ice cream of choice tonight. And now you've got the ice cream delish in a couple of days.
Right.
There you go. Perfect. So, okay, well, that's going to do it for the invitation. It's available, if anybody does want to see it, and you haven't, and even though we spoiled it, it's on Netflix. So you can just watch it if you have Netflix. Watch it. I hate saying for free because you pay for Netflix, but nevertheless, it's there.
No additional charge.
No additional charge. So there you go. So, all right, that's going to do it for the invitation. It's a successful run-through, I would say. So, all right, before we sign off, we have to do listener feedback.
Okay.
For the previous episode, which was Dead and Buried, which was a movie you loved. That's how I remember it.
Really?
Okay, so we got comments on the Dead and Buried episode from Chris Franklin, of course. Chris, mm-hmm. He says, I haven't seen this film, but now I want to. Even with the plot spoiled, again, my fault for listening on, not yours. I would still like to see it. Jack Albertson was also the man of Chico and the Man, of mm-hmm. course. So doubly disturbing to see him as the villain. I hate to tell this to Tracy, but my dad has macular degeneration to both eyes, and about once a month, he has to have an injection in at least one eye, sometimes both. I've taken him to the doctor many times myself and watched it happen. Truly disturbing, but better than going blind. He's a good sport about it just because of that. Not sure how he stands it, though. And Tracy, don't hit Rob. Let's stop the violence. I agree with Chris.
Chris, you know, you were good up to a point.
Be the change you want to be. David H. Gutierrez, he quotes back Robert. That never gets old. I like how you decided to see a movie whose title mirrors how darling Tracy now considers your relationship. Thank you. Thank you, David. My pal, Mike Gillis, he says, I just wanted to champion what Tracy said about eye trauma in movies. I'm an enthusiastic fan of all sorts of gory zombie movies with the worst sort of bloody violence, and none of it makes me flinch. But poke out one eyeball in a movie, and I always have to pause and wait for my throat to unclench. There's Mike. Chris Lewis, our Dr. Lewis, he chimes in. He says, I completely agree regarding the eyeball stuff. There's something horribly visceral about eyes that makes anything going into them utterly cringeworthy. I think it's the most squishiness of the eyeball, along with the fact that they will see everything that's happening to them that makes them trigger such squeamish sensations far more than a bucket of blood and guts. Yuck.
And, you know, it's kind of like brains. It's a different, you know, like, blood, you know, the texture, mm-hmm. kind of. But brains...
And eyeballs are all...
Eyeballs with, you know, like, aqueous humor, vitreous humor.
Mm-hmm. Like, wow, look at you dropping the terms.
Like juiciness and so... Oh, God, I'm making myself feel gross.
I'm not doing anything, everybody. She's doing this to herself. And then Chris chimes in again. He says, without wanting to cause any domestic trouble, so far Tracy has sat through 2,387 minutes of horror movies. That's equivalent of Rob watching 13.87 showings of The Sound of Music or 397.8 showings of Piper. So thank you very much for that, Chris. I appreciate the statistics.
And trust me, he has not.
What?
Sat through that many Pipers.
No. I don't have a problem with it, but I just haven't done it.
Oh, you don't? Okay, well, let's start.
We can. I'm not. Right there's no now. Problem. All right, that's fine. By the way... I do need to mention that I offered to take you to see Sound of Music, and you were the one that canceled it. So it's not like I'm...
We were going to see it on the big screen.
We were going to see it on the big screen, and we didn't. We ended
so
up not going.
So many things to do.
Yep. And then finally, we got an email from our old friend Manjit Dajal, who is an old listener of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. He says, trying to catch up on all the shows, and I just finished listening to the Omen episode. Firstly, I love this podcast. You have given me a long list of films that I have never seen to go watch. Secondly, after listening to this episode, I got thinking as to how this film has influenced my life. Not that I want to be the son of the devil, but as I probably watched as a young boy, not as young as you are, Rob, in the 80s, it set my view on the genre, and I don't really watch horror films these days, just virtually through you guys on the show. The chilling creep factor is very high, and there are certainly certain stereotypes that this film plays on perfectly, like the odd child, the creepy nanny, the big house, the quiet church. church, the snarling dog, all things that if I see in my everyday life will get me walking quicker. My paper route was never the same again after this film.
I could see that.
Nearly all the key locations in this film are either close to where I used to work or where I live now. The American Embassy in Mayfair in London was around the corner from my office. Later, one of my close friends lived opposite Bishop's Park, where Father Brennan was spiked. With a spire, or was it a lightning conductor? My wife never went near that park once again, I told her. Now I live in a very nice part of Surrey, but these other locations are a short distance from me. The cathedral in Guildford, where Damien has a panic attack about stepping foot in a church. The ambassador's creepy house is just in the next village to ours. The church at the end of the film is also a short drive away. And one of my favorite books is Good Omens by the late Sir Terry Pratchett and the legendary Neil Gaiman. If you have not read it, I urge you to. It's just an awesome comical take on the story of the Antichrist. Before listening to this episode, I really had not thought about the subconscious influence this film had. Suffice to say, I will have to watch it again in the coming days, but only in the daytime and not on my own. Happy podcasting, and look forward to catching up on the rest of the shows. Cheers, Manjit. Thank you, Manjit. That was very nice. That's weird. He lives like that. It's like Omen Central over there. So that's our feedback for this last episode, Den Buried, and for the Omen. So, Tracy, once again, thank you so much for sitting through this movie. I appreciate it.
Thank you for showing it to me.
I will, by the time everybody...
That was sarcasm intended.
Yeah, I know. I think I got that. By the time everybody hears this, the Baltimore Comic Con will have taken place. Mm-hmm. But I'm just giving you a heads up that I'll be gone for a while for 2 days straight, so you can just watch before we go on
over
repeat.
Over and over again.
There you go. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Anyway, I think that's going to do it for the invitation. Thank you so much again for humoring me. I do appreciate it.
You need to
speak. This is an audio medium, baby. Oh. You can't just nod. People don't know what that is. So anyway.
Should I narrate? Like, I'm nodding now?
Maybe so. Anyway, thanks everybody for listening. We appreciate all the feedback and all the kind comments about the show. I'm having a lot of fun. I don't know about Tracy, but I am. So, Tracy, once again, thank you, and I love you.
Love you.
Bye.
Bye.
Where's Joy? I mean, where the fuck is Joy?
What are you talking about, Will?
I just got a message from him. He said he was here, that he had gotten here at 7.
What?
He said he was here.
Eden, is that true?
I haven't seen Joy tonight.
Edie, where is he?
Will, stop, please.
No, just... I just got a message from him. He said he was here. He made the call from right outside.
We haven't seen him.
Don't fucking lie to me. Call from right outside your front door.
David is not lying to you. Joy never got here.
Maybe he turned around, man. Look, he might have forgotten something.
Well, never know. Yeah, why is everyone acting so fucking polite? Where's Joy?
Hey, Eden, what's going on? I have not seen Joy tonight, Gina, I swear.
Something isn't right here. There's something very strange going on here, and no one is saying anything.
What do you think is happening, Will?
Hey, who are you? Huh? See, I don't get why you two are here.
Hey, these are my guests.
Yeah. 2 years. We don't see you for 2 years, and then all of a sudden, we get invited to this lavish dinner. You're all smiles, spewing out all this jargon with these two in tow. Don't tell me that this is normal. The invitation.
It helps people.
Well, everybody's in love. No, it's a fucking cult, Miguel! It's a fucking cult!
Will, sit down!
No, look at the video, okay? It's not about communion, it's not about family, it's about fucking denial.
You are out of line.
All right, no, it's about denial, or you know what it is? It's a fucking brainwash. Our son died, Edie, and you're trying to ignore it. It meant something when he died, and don't you try to erase that. Ty was real. It is real. Please, please, Edie. Where's Troy?